1918, revolution ends World War I, and shakes the capitalist world. Bob Labby, Committee for a Workers' International. The horrific slaughter of World War I has haunted generations. By the time it ended, it had put into question the right of the ruling classes to rule, something that helped provoke revolutions and mass struggles around the world. Just the huge military casualties, around 10 million soldiers killed, and many millions wounded, led to a revulsion against a war, which many rightly saw as a contest between rival empires and powers, often with no real fundamental differences in character between them. For many people, the current centenary commemorations will be for those who died and were injured in that slaughter, not the governments and empires which fought each other. None of the main combatant countries were even formally fully democratic. No women and not all men were allowed to vote. Russia, one of Britain's main allies, was a dictatorial empire autocratically ruled by an anti-Semitic royal family. In British propaganda at the war's start, much was made of the German invasion of Belgium. But Belgium, while small, was ruled by a ruling class, just as imperialistic as its rivals, something witnessed in its brutal rule over the Congo. In an accidental coincidence, almost simultaneously as the British ruling class was arguing that the new European war was against German militarism, the British Army was crushing protests as it sought to bring the Egba people in western Nigeria fully under British imperial rule. Cosmetic changes faced, especially after the 1917 Russian Revolution, with widespread revulsion that questioned the war, the British ruling class itself underwent a mixture of cosmetic changes, while also granting some reforms. This meant that military celebrations of victory were kept more in the background and increasingly official emphasis was put on the horrors that the soldiers faced, and their huge personal sacrifices. Naturally, this reflected the widespread popular sympathy, not for the war, but for those who suffered in it. This was seen now in nearly all of the public ceremonies to mark the 100th anniversary of World War I's formal end. Significantly, while August this year saw some mention in Britain of the 1918 Battle of Amiens as a turning point, hardly anything is being said as to why the war ended when it did, with the German army still in Belgium and France, and, while in retreat, not decisively defeated. The reason is simple. Both the ruling class and its defenders do not want to explain the part played by revolution, and the ruling class's fear of revolution, in finally ending World War I. Certainly by autumn 1918, the German military command had drawn the conclusion that it could no longer win the war. The failure of that year's Hindenburg offensives, combined with the increasing arrival of US troops in Europe, was swinging the balance against them. At the end of September 1918, Ludendorff and Hindenburg, the de facto military rulers of Germany from 1916 onwards, told the German emperor that they must have an immediate armistice. In early October, they handed over the reins of government to civilians, led by Prince Maximum of Baden, a cousin of the German emperor, charged with agreeing an armistice with US President Woodrow Wilson. The generals hoped this move would also mean that they would not carry the odium of defeat. Quickly, the new government wrote to Wilson, and, after internal disagreements, on the 5th of November the Western Allies agreed to begin negotiations for a truce and reparations. However, events in Germany were also accelerating the formal end to the war. It was becoming increasingly clear that the war was in its last stages. By now, the horrors of the war, the mass privation at home, and the example of the 1917 Russian Revolution had deepened opposition to the war both in Germany and the Austro-Hungarian Empire. Significant anti-war protests and strikes had taken place, particularly at the start of 1918, and these started to increase as it appeared the war was coming to an end. In mid-October, the Austro-Hungarian leaders, Germany's main ally, decided to ask for a separate peace deal as their multinational empire began to rapidly break up amid mass protests and upheavals. In Germany, the spark that set off the revolution was the refusal, on the 3rd of November, of German sailors in Kiel to set off on what they called a death cruise, a suicidal last battle against the British Navy. On the 4th of November, after brief fighting with pro-government forces, the sailors joined with local workers, in forming a workers' and soldiers' council to run the city. It was not at all accidental that this name was chosen. They were looking to the example of the Russian Revolution, where, almost exactly a year earlier, Similarly named popular organizations, the Soviets, had taken power in the October Revolution, and formed a workers' government. Over the next 5 days, a revolutionary wave spread across Germany, with workers' councils being formed in city after city, local rulers being overthrown, republics declared in the constituent parts of the German Empire, and, on the 9th of November, the empire itself collapsing, and an all-German republic declared. That very same evening, the 9th of November, the British cabinet met to discuss the situation. Already fearing revolution, the events in Germany and elsewhere gave a new urgency to the government's discussions about agreeing to an armistice. The chief of the Imperial General Staff, the British Empire's senior military leader, present at that meeting, later wrote in his diary that the French leader Clemenceau had written saying that he was afraid that Germany may collapse and Bolshevism gain control. Prime Minister Lloyd George asked me if I wanted that to happen, or if I did not prefer an armistice. Without hesitation, I replied armistice. The whole cabinet agreed with me. 2 days later, the deal was done. Simultaneously, the eyes of the ruling classes were turning to a growing new enemy, the threat of socialist revolution, summed up in the word Bolshevism, and they were prepared to jointly fight this threat to their power and rule. Thus, while the German army was ordered to rapidly withdraw from Belgium, France and elsewhere, a blind eye was turned to German army units remaining in the east to aid counter-revolutions. Indeed, the day before the war ended, at another British cabinet meeting, Churchill commented that we might have to build up the German army, as it is important to get Germany on her legs again for fear of the spread of Bolshevism. But while the World War ended, fighting did not. Instead, there were years of civil wars, local or regional wars as empires broke up, new countries were established, or, like the British in Iraq, newcomers attempted to establish their own colonial rule. But what really characterized the immediate post-World War I period were the revolutions and counter-revolutions that swept over country after country. World War I was not unexpected. Europe had seen different war scares before 1914. Socialists had long debated how to oppose a war between the rival imperialist powers breaking out, and what to do if it did. At the 1907 Congress of the Second International, the body which linked together socialist parties, a resolution on war and militarism was agreed, which ended by arguing that for socialists, in case war should break out anyway, it is their duty to intervene for its speedy termination and to strive with all their power to utilize the economic and political crisis created by the war to rouse the masses, and thereby to hasten the downfall of capitalist class rule. This expectation that war would produce radicalization and revolutions was completely borne out. The first such event was the 1916 Easter Uprising in Dublin, followed the next year by the Russian Revolution, an event which immediately had an international impact. The Tsarist autocracy's overthrow in the February 1917 revolution thrust the questions of democratic rights and war aims into the spotlight. The October 1917 revolution gave the first example of the working class overthrowing capitalism, beginning to run society, and appealing to workers internationally to follow suit. The October Revolution's appeal had a growing impact throughout 1918, and when revolutions started to break out throughout Europe in late 1918, it was seen as the example to follow. Bitter opposition, the revulsion at the slaughter, which had taken place, and bitterness towards the ruling classes, which had been responsible, strengthened a deep opposition towards capitalism, and, inspired by the Russian example, a willingness to fight for socialist change. Hence the ruling class's growing fear of Bolshevism and their willingness to fight back. In Europe, revolution swept through Germany, Italy and many parts of the former Austro-Hungarian and Russian empires. Ireland saw intensifying opposition to British rule, and fighting, especially in the south, for independence, which, in Limerick, saw a general strike and the formation of a Soviet in April 1919. General or mass strikes were a feature of these movements internationally, alongside the formation of committees to organize the struggle, often inspired by the example of the Soviets and the Russian Revolution, and sometimes actually using the same name. The combination of the effect of the World War and the Russian Revolution's impact was felt far and wide. The newly formed Communist International became the largest organized worldwide revolutionary movement seen so far. In the colonial world, it meant significant boosts for anti-imperialist movements in China, Egypt, and India. In the US, Seattle was gripped by a completely solid 5-day general strike demanding higher wages. Britain in 1919 was not immune from these movements, although they did not reach the revolutionary pitch of Germany. In Glasgow, January saw a local general strike demanding a 40-hour week being met by the deployment of troops and tanks onto the city's streets. The government feared that this strike, coming after a series of battles over wages and rents, could develop into something more serious. A similar situation developed in Belfast around the same time. The British government's deployment of armed troops against strikers and other protesters was not unusual at the beginning of the 20th century, but after World War I the forces of the state were themselves sometimes in revolt. Fearing revolution, the British ruling class made many concessions, like giving all adult men, and some women, the vote. But wartime British Prime Minister Lloyd George's promised land fit for heroes never materialized, and by the early 1920s the government and employers launched a counter-offensive which was the background to the 1926 general strike. These events radicalized the Labour Party. In 1918 it adopted a socialist objective. However, its pro-capitalist wing worked to ensure that the party would not challenge capitalism and began, in the early 1920s, the first efforts to drive Marxists out of the party and make it safe for the ruling class. Now, 100 years on from these great events, they have important lessons for today's socialists. While the pre-World War I socialist movement predicted the war, and what would flow from it, the revolutionary movements that followed from it did not manage to end capitalism. Own ruling class a key reason for this was, that the majority of the pre-war socialist leaders came to accept the continuation of capitalism, and, on that basis, supported their own ruling classes in the war. From there, for some, it was a short step to actively bloodily suppressing the revolution as the German Social Democratic leadership did. At the same time, the young, relatively inexperienced revolutionaries in the newly formed communist parties were not able to immediately develop the strength or consistently apply the policies and program necessary to win mass support and complete the revolutions. While the last 100 years have seen many movements and revolutions, capitalism has been able to continue. The question of ending capitalism and the horrors that it can bring, wars, poverty, environmental crisis, booms, and slumps, lays not only in struggles, but also in building a movement with a clear program and willingness to achieve that aim. Further reading: Germany. 100 years since the November Revolution.